everyone, this is Sean Plott, aka Day 9, presenting today a strategic technique that I call sidestepping. In this podcast, I'm going to begin by going through some definitions and a really extended example of what sidestepping is, and then we'll wrap up with a whole bunch more examples just so you have a much broader sense of its applications. In a very simple sense, sidestepping is completely avoiding a strategy or tactic that your opponent would be really, really, really good at countering or crushing. Now, most of you are thinking that this is totally obvious, but I want to stop for a minute and think about the way that your thought process develops over time as you're playing StarCraft, or really any strategy game. So, think back to when you were a disgusting, revolting newbie. The classic mistake that I'm sure you made, and virtually all big newbies make, is to obsess about defense. When the game starts, they freak out and build a million turrets lining their base, they have 50 bunkers and 1,000 tanks behind it, and they never move out no matter what. Virtually anyone who's listening to this podcast right now has likely broken this shell long ago. Now you're all proud of the fact that you try to be aggressive and try to get into your opponent's face. What's most interesting to me about this defense monkey phase is that when most players break it, it's not really a gradual process. It's not that they get slowly less and less defensive over time. It tends to be that they figure out a strategy or tactic that works really well, and then, subsequently, their entire thought process revolves around figuring out how to kill their opponent as quickly as possible. So for instance, when I was in this phase, in my Zerg vs. Terran, I just rushed for lurkers every single game no matter what. And if that didn't work, I would try to lurker drop him. And if that didn't work, I lost. I mean, that was like my entire game plan. Interestingly, this thought process becomes very hard to break because it develops into more of an instinct or an impulse in the middle of a game rather than a series of conscious thoughts and decisions. For instance, in a Zerg vs. Zerg, one player's Spire might be behind his opponents by 300 hit points. A lot of times, this player will panic, send all his Zerglings to try to kill his opponent, and it won't work at all. Now what position is this player in? Not only is his Spire tech behind, but suddenly he has no Zerglings whatsoever, and is in virtually no situation to put any pressure on his opponent for the rest of the game. In Zerg vs. Terran, you'll see a lot of Zergs open up with the standard 3-hatch or 2-hatch Mutalisk Zergling harass, but they'll become so obsessed with the idea of being really aggressive and harass-oriented that they develop into a player who has no transition out of that phase. They will only Mutalisk Zergling until their opponent is dead or they've lost. You'll see the Protoss player start being concerned his Zerg opponent's taking the whole map, so the Protoss will send his whole army to die to a giant defense of sunken spores and lurkers. I made it fairly clear that each of these players is making a mistake. However, stop and think about what the thought process of that player is in his post-game analysis, not just in the game, but afterwards when he rewatches the replay and has time to reflect. In the Zerg vs. Zerg game, the player looks at it and says, well, I was behind on Spire tech, so he was going to be ahead of me in Mutalisks, so I guess I need to figure out a better way to kill him before he gets those Mutalisks. My Zergling attack didn't work then, so I suppose I need to make more Zerglings, or maybe I need to wait a little while later to attack with those Zerglings, or maybe a little earlier. Maybe I can kill off enough of his Zerglings so that I can build a sunken colony on the edge of his creep. The Zerg vs. Terran player probably rewatched that game and said, it seems like there were some more holes in his defense that I could have abused with some more Zerglings or some more Mutalisks. I guess I'll cut down on drones even more so that way I can abuse those holes with more efficiency, and that way I'll be able to harass him to death. The Protoss player says to himself afterwards, man, that Zerg player really was expanding a whole bunch. I guess I need to work on the timing of that attack, maybe micro my units better and storm a little better, because I just can't let that Zerg player get all those expansions up or else I'm doomed. Now this analysis seems okay. It seems like these players kind of have the right idea in mind. However, let's consider the opponent's point of view in all these situations. In a Zerg vs. Zerg, the player who's getting the faster Spire, his build is designed to hold off laying all ins, because what's the point of getting a faster Spire if you die to Zerglings every time? The strong point of that build is making sure he doesn't die to Zerglings. An early expanding Terran in Terran vs. Zerg thinks to himself of ways to defend against these types of all-in attacks and harassments. The strong point of an early expanding Terran is really good defense. The Zerg player, who's expanding a lot, is not going to be throwing down expansions in hopes that the Protoss doesn't kill it, so he's going to make sure he has very strong defense for these expansions. With that in mind, what were our earlier players doing? They were not trying to find weaknesses in their opponent's play. Instead, they were trying to find holes in the strong points of their opponent's play. And that's a subtle difference that I'm going to gripe on for a minute. Because if you start spending all your time trying to abuse the holes in your opponent's strengths, a lot of times you'll be faced with a good enough player who doesn't really have any holes. He actually really is good enough to hold off that sort of attack. The easiest example would be the Terran player in the Terran vs. Zerg, who can look at you trying to do your cute harassment with Mutas and Lings and say, well, I guess I just need to make an extra bunker and a few extra turrets, and then I win no matter what. And that is exactly what will happen every time. Therefore, we're going to talk about sidestepping. We're not going to be trying to puncture holes in our opponent's strengths, but rather we're going to exploit the weaknesses of our opponent's play so that we'll have a big advantage later on. Trying to sidestep your opponent's strengths will become a key linchpin in the development of your builds and your ability to remain at a strategic advantage for longer games. So, let's begin with an extended example of sidestepping with a build that everybody knows about. It's 5 Hatch Hydra against an early expanding Protoss in Zerg vs. Protoss. When I first started playing StarCraft 11 years ago, early expanding as Protoss was not the standard play. So when players started to use it more and more, Zerg players in, 2001, 2002 or so, began countering it with every all-in that you could think of. They were doing the Ling all-ins, they were doing the slow lurker drop, they were doing the fast Mutalisk and this sort of thing. Because they were still locked in that mindset of, okay, he's doing something I'm not familiar with. I guess I gotta kill him now. As Protoss players became better defensively, Zerg players learned to sidestep the strong defense, and they began taking a third base with their third hatch. And the Zergs would also abuse the fact that the Protosses were behind on tech by rushing to Mutalisks really, really fast. And then Zergs kind of had a nice little leg up on everything. Then one day, Bisou came along, and he popularized the fast Corsair play against Zerg. And Zergs, who'd been going Mutalisks off three bases, were suddenly getting crushed, because Bisou would come out with 6, 7, or 8 Corsairs, demolish all the Mutalisks, and then eat up all the Overlords. And Zerg, on three bases, would have like 5 maximum food or something for half the game until he lost. What's really interesting is that if you go back and you look at a whole bunch of the Zerg vs. Protoss games right after Bisou's win against Savior, sorry, spoiler alert, right after that period, Zerg players started doing the all-in styles again. You saw a lot of players doing new school Ling Hydra busts. For instance, they would get Ling speed and then Hydra range, not Hydra speed, just Hydra range, and they would walk up to the cannons with the Hydras, they would pick them off and then run in with a bunch of speed Zerglings and all in that way. We saw the 2-hatch Hydra bust being developed around then. The players who didn't do those big all-ins early on were trying to do the exact same things they did pre-Bisou against the new Corsair style. They were trying to jam the square rod into the circle hole, as you'd say. They were just trying to figure out a way to make Mutalisks work and make the standard 3-hatch play work. However, since none of that was really working, we finally got to see the birth of 5-hatch Hydralisk, the play that we see so commonly today. 5-hatch Hydralisk was the first build that completely avoided the strengths of Corsair play and abused its greatest weakness, the fact that it is not very good at having a big mid-game army to control the center. The Protoss has spent so much time and money going Corsairs and building all the cannons that when it's time to start making a mid-game army, he has to completely shift his tech tree. It's much more difficult to go for a big mid-game army when you've opened with Corsairs. It's really kind of funny if you stop and watch Zerg vs. Protoss from a total newbie's point of view. In fact, I had one of my friends over who had only ever played StarCraft, on BGH with his buddies, and we were watching a high-level Zerg vs. Protoss together. And he was so confused because it seemed like no one was making any units nor any defense for like the first 8 minutes of the game. This Protoss player expanded, built one cannon, then teched straight for Corsairs and made one cannon in his main, and the Zerg was expanding a ton, making a ton of hatches and Evo chambers, and the only things he ever really saw unit-wise was 4 Scourge and 3 Corsairs. At that point, I had to explain to him that what the Zerg was really doing was avoiding the two biggest strengths of the Protoss early expanding build. He was avoiding attacking too early with those well-placed cannons, and he was avoiding getting any sort of air too early, because the Corsairs are just so strong against air. As a result, the Zerg player's entire plan is for something later on down the line, that he's just avoiding the strengths completely. Since I've spent a good bit of time on 5-hatch Hydralisk, let's move on to some other examples so we can see the real strength of sidestepping in all our play in StarCraft. In a lot of recent Terran vs. Zerg, we see Flash do this one racks, one factory opening when he early expands. Flash will start making Medic Marine out of one barracks, and with that factory, he'll actually start getting Goliaths with range. It's really weird and really cute, and a lot of Zerg players have had tremendous difficulty defeating it. Similar to the previous example, a lot of Zerg players are trying to defeat this by just killing it with Mutaling early, doing some sort of all-in. Although we did see Jadong able to take out Flash on Return to the King, most other Zergs are actually failing miserably when they do this. The Mutalisk Karrasque gets crushed, and the hit point amount of Goliaths are able to hold off Lings really, really well. The most brilliant response that I saw, however, was July Zerg against Flash on Neo Medusa in the GOM TV matches. To understand why this was so brilliant, let's stop and think about what's really strong about this Goliath Medic Marine opening. In general, Goliaths have amazing range, and Medic Marine do amazing damage when the Mutalisks are close enough. So, this means that the Goliaths snipe at Mutalisk Harass really well, and if the Mutalisks try to come in and kill the Goliaths, there's a whole bunch of Medic Marine there, ready to just eat the Mutalisks alive. In other words, this Flash opening is really good at holding off Mutalisk Harass. Even if there are some Zerglings that are able to sneak in, Goliaths have a good amount of hit points, so the Marines can be microed behind it, and it's, again, very, very hard to kill. Even if the Zerg tries to do some sort of Lurker opening, the Goliaths and the Medic Marines can form a really nice arc, and, once again, the hit points of the Goliaths make the Lurkers significantly less effective. So, Flash's one racks, one factory build is most strong at holding off early to mid-game pressure. It's really good at keeping that fast expansion alive. Traditionally, when Zerg players open up with Mutalisk Harass, they transition into Lurkers, because you need those Lurkers in order to hold off some sort of Medic Marine Harass, or even a Medic Marine attack that could kill an expansion. However, July Zerg knew that this sort of attack was not going to come in the early mid-game, because that's not how Flash's build is designed. You can't do that sort of push with just one barracks. So, July Zerg correctly and comfortably made 5 hatches before his Hydralisk Den. As a result, July had a tremendously stronger economy when Flash was able to push out at a later time. Isn't that brilliant? I mean, when you go back and watch that game, you pretty much see July doing no attacking early. I mean, you're used to players like Jadong, who are just darting in and out with Mutalisks and never letting up any pressure on the player ever. But in that game, July Zerg just didn't really even attack that much. But because of the way he responded, because of the way he planned, he was in a tremendously better position than Flash when it came to the mid and late game. That, my friends, is truly the art of sidestepping. Now let's move on to a completely different game. Pure vs. Flash on Destination, also a game from the GOM TV matches. The game began fairly normally. Pure opened up with some Dragoon pressure and Flash opened up with an early expand, but it was really interesting that Flash threw in an extra factory as he was expanding and pushed back against Pure early and ended up tossing up a contain right outside Pure's double bridge. Pure's response is a very common form of sidestepping, which was not to try to kill the contain, because the contain is just so strong on the other side of that double bridge. Rather, it was to get a bunch of shuttles and counterattack Flash's main, because Flash is devoting so many units to keeping this contain alive. What was truly brilliant in that game was Flash's response, and it was fairly clear that Flash had actually planned this response into his play. Think about what most players would do in Flash's position. They would bolster up the contain, and then try to also bolster up the defenses in their main, trying to make sure that they didn't die to this counterplay, and also make sure that the contain continued to remain effective. You know what Flash did that was so brilliant? He abandoned the contain straight up, really early on. He just set the contain up. When the first shuttle started to go to his base, he just ditched the contain and never reinforced it for the remainder of the game. Pure's entire game plan revolved around hurting a Terran because his army was so far away from his main. So, Flash simply put his whole army in his main. What's even more amazing is the fact that you could clearly see Flash had planned on sacking his contain. A lot of times a player will temporarily bring units back to defend and then return to bolstering the containment. However, when you watch that game, Flash pulled his units back and then threw down another command center, preparing to expand to his left natural. The rest of the game was totally one-sided, because Flash turned the game into a three-base Terran who was very well turtled, had solid defense, tanks, Goliaths placed everywhere, against a two-basing Protoss who had spent most of his money not on gateways, but on lots of shuttles, Reavers, and Dark Templar for harassment that never really came to do any damage. It was actually really funny watching that game to see how long that containment had been abandoned. That Pure assumed that they were playing this standard sort of game where Pure would be harassing so much and exploiting this weakness. However, Flash made sure that weakness was never even there because Flash sidestepped the entire normal contain game that you would see in a Terran vs. Protoss and instead just played against the weakness of Pure's response beautifully. I would like to finish up with a personal anecdote of one of the most rewarding experiences I have ever had my entire StarCraft career. It's the story of how I developed a counter to a strategy I was having a huge amount of difficulty with, and I used the notion of sidestepping to come up with it. This is the story of Zerg vs. Terran on Azalea, or whatever pronunciation you want, for that WCG map that looks like a swastika. So I'm going to call it Azalea. If you look at Azalea, it's fairly wide open. There's no ramps. It's all on flat ground. There's a pretty wide open middle. The chokes are actually fairly large themselves. So immediately, I'm kind of leaning towards Lurkerling openings. Because without any ramps or any narrow chokes, it makes holding a third or fourth gas pretty difficult to do. Yeah, Mutilus Karass is pretty good on the map because the minerals are against cliffs. But I still prefer to do Lurkerling openings when there's that wide of space to deal with, and when the third and fourth gases are that hard to take. Immediately, I started to really like going Lurkerling as I played through a whole bunch of games. However, the big problem I encountered was against players who went two racks, fast tank push. A really good Terran player would get to my front before I had Lurkers. He would set up a whole bunch of bunkers and turrets, and he'd just start slowly pushing forward until he eventually was able to kill my Mineral Natural at the front. Timing-wise, my Lurkers would finish around the time my third or fourth Sunken Colony would die. I did say that the chokes were fairly large, but not nearly large enough to flank a well-positioned bunker tank marine army. So the first few times I tried to just kill it right when my Lurkers finished, he would kill my whole army, finish off the Mineral Natural, and then just walk into my base and win. In my next few attempts, I tried to make more Sunken Colonies to stay alive a little longer, but then I was a little bit low on minerals, and again, he was still in that entrenched position right outside my front, and I just couldn't break it with the little bit of extra time I would get. I would maybe be able to get 7 or 8 Lurkers, but still, I'm hitting 2 or 3 bunkers, a whole bunch of Medic Marines and tanks that are really perfectly placed right at my front. Then I started trying to get more Zerglings early on, to hopefully overwhelm his army with Zerglings before it ever even got to my front. Again, I encountered Terrans who were good enough that they would just micro-kill it, and then I would be in an even worse position than I was before. I was feeling a little depressed because I didn't want to have to abandon this Lurkerling opening. It was doing so well against early expanders, against other one-base play, against mech. I didn't want to ditch the entire strategy just because there was this one problem. So I started to really sit down and think, what is really good about this fast tank push? And it really was the position right outside my natural. And I could not figure out a way to save that natural, that mineral natural expansion. Suddenly, it dawned upon me that I didn't need to save that mineral natural expansion. Resource-wise, I already have my other natural with gas up and running. Positionally, it's a much wider choke once you get past the mineral natural expansion. So if he did try to walk forward even more, I'd be able to flank him with a whole bunch of Zerglings and Lurkers, and he doesn't have a whole bunch of bunkers there because there's still creep. It's much better to just sack it, wait an extra minute or two until I now have 12 Lurkers, and then 5 to 6 control groups of Zerglings. And then I can break his contain really easily, and at that point, the fast tank-pushing Terran is pretty much screwed. He's devoted so much resources to getting there early and then entrenching himself with bunkers and turrets that he doesn't have nearly strong enough economy to deal with my two fully functional bases and my tech that's already heading towards defilers and a whole bunch of upgrades. The next few times I faced tank pushes were so easy and it felt so great because he had this great position set up and he would kill everything and I would just not deal with it. I just happily move my drones away and I had this line of Lurkers there and it was just this eerie quiet before I came out with this giant army, rolled his front and won the game immediately. In fact, I remember a particularly kick-ass game where I was against some player who was 65-1, and the game, again, just felt so easy, and I felt like the man. So, not only can sidestepping make you feel awesome, but strategically, it allows you to win games that you are having a tremendous amount of trouble with just by stepping back, analyzing the situation, and making sure you're not trying to hit your opponent at his greatest strengths. If you're having trouble thinking of ways to incorporate some sidestepping techniques into your play, a great way to practice it is to try to make all your games go on longer. For instance, let's say you're playing Protoss vs. Zerg, and the Zerg player comes out with a big attack, and you absolutely demolish it. 90% of the time, you as a player would just go counterattack him and win. However, in that sort of circumstance, I want you to instead take an expansion safely. Abuse the fact that your opponent cannot attack you, as opposed to the fact that he cannot hold off your big army. Make opportunities to create late-game strategic advantages, rather than making opportunities to kill your opponent sooner. I was actually looking at some statistics recently, and most players' games are, on average, 10 to 12 minutes long. Try to make yours 15 to 17 minutes long. Try to really challenge yourself to abuse long-term thinking. And by doing so, you'll find that a lot of your early and mid-game plays become much more clear, and the games will feel much easier in the long run. And that about wraps it up. I sincerely hope you take this advice and go kick some ass. Cheers, everyone!